You're listening to RE Snapshots with Jessica Strauss. Each month we chat about the science behind the weeds and decode some of the trickier concepts which crop up.
On this episode of RE Snapshots, we're catching up with JG Figueredo, also known as JD. Most of you would know him as that in the industry. He was an RE Masters student and worked alongside RE researcher Roberto Busi to try and break the herbicide simethylin, which is commercially known as Luximax. And they were not able to do that in their research. And so this is obviously great news for farmers and agronomists because it does mean that this herbicide is still working and resistance hasn't developed yet. But we do know that it's important to be aware that there's no guarantee that resistance won't develop. And so the best way to prevent that is by using diverse weed control tactics. And we'll talk about that a bit later. JD does join us now to tell us about the research. How are you going, JD?
Hey, Jess. I'm doing good and thanks for having me in this podcast.
It will be very interesting to talk about this in a bit more detail. RE Insight has been written on this research recently, so you can also read that on the website. I'll put it in the show notes. But before we get into the research topic for today, I'm interested in hearing what you've been doing since your master's at RE. So everyone's got a bit of a context of where you're at in your career, JD.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for asking that. Yeah, I finished my master's in the end of 2021, and I've joined ImTrade Crop Science, which is a crop protection company, WA based. So since then, I've worked with them, and recently I've just accepted a new role as a sales rep for the northern part of WA. Yeah, and here I am.
Yeah, lots of travel involved and very busy. Yeah. So today we're talking about yourself and RE researcher Roberto Busi's work on looking at simethylin in the lab and seeing if you could break that herbicide. Could you talk to us about how this research project came about?
Yeah, so Roberto Busi and UWA as the herbicide resistant testing received loads of populations all across the country. So it's a service that not only UWA runs, but some other units, they also do the same job. And it's important to see how the resistance is moving out there from growers in their paddocks. So long story short, we've seen from some of these populations that not only simethylin, but some other herbicides, there was some escapes. And some of them were confirmed as resistant populations, but not in the case of simethylin. But we found out from some specific populations that they were a little bit more tolerant. And then that's what we did. We tried to investigate a little bit further on those specific populations.
Very good. And we'll get into the detail of that in a moment. But we do know from previous experience that when researchers have tried to break herbicides in the past and evolve resistance in the lab, they have been quite successful. But this wasn't the case with simethylin. Could you talk us through why you think that that is how it unfolded?
Well, we knew since the beginning that, you know, back in those days, simethylin was pretty much launched. So the first country which had simethylin, apart from other countries which are still waiting for the registration. So we knew that the herbicide would be very successful and there would not be any resistance because it was just launched. But even though we wanted to know why those populations were having a little bit of more tolerance than the others. And when I say populations, obviously we are talking about ryegrass, Lolium digitum.
Yes, and you initially tested 492 populations of ryegrass. And you mentioned before about how Roberto Busi received those from growers for resistance testing in 2020. And it is important to note that these populations were suspected to be resistant to a range of herbicides. And JD, you then sprayed these populations with simethylin. Let's walk through the outcome of this. Can you give us an overview?
Yeah, so these populations were suspected to be resistant to other herbicides. As I mentioned before, simethylin had just been launched back in that year. So there wasn't any suspicion or anything about resistance to simethylin. And then out of those populations, we saw 28, which we had some escape. but again, below labor rate. And yeah, we kept those populations, and then we grew them. We harvest their seeds, and then we clean those seeds. And then we made what we call as one generation. So we have the parents, and then we had the progeny. And then we have selected only five, which were really showing a little bit of increase in tolerance to simethylene.
Yeah, interesting. Can you talk to us a bit more about that finding and what that finding means, JD?
Well, up to now, and as I mentioned before, just to make sure, there is no resistance to simethylene yet. And those five populations which were resistant to at least two of the other herbicides tested in that year, including post-emergent and pre-emergent herbicides, simethylene was able to kill them all and under a labor rate. But then the progeny had 5 to 6 fold a little bit more tolerant to simethylene. But again, you have the labor rate, and this increase in tolerance was just very small, but it was happening, which means that maybe in the future, if we kept making the recurrent selection of that specific population, and then we could see maybe every new generation an increase on tolerance to simethylene.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that all of the diverse tactics and using correct label rates is so important. JD, how do we prevent resistance developing to simethylene? What are your tips for people out there?
Well, I think diversity is key. So we have out there from WeedSmart the big six, and I see it as a massive toolbox. And then we should explore all the tactics we have in there, not only chemical, but non-chemical tactics. And even though this increase on tolerance to simethylene in a few populations we did in the glass house, it wasn't, this selection wasn't done in the field. And it could be used with a sort of stewardship, not only for simethylene, but all the other new herbicides, because we can still, I would say, use the same herbicide almost every year. But then what we could do maybe is to rotate that same chemical in different paddocks. For example, you're not going to use simethylene in the same paddock every year, but then you rotate into others. And the others, which obviously haven't had simethylene that specific year, you can, you know, use another pre-emergent herbicide instead. Yeah.
Certainly. And JD, is there anything else that you wanted to add before we wrap things up?
I would like to acknowledge Ari for having me over those almost 2 years. And it was a connection from my professor in Brazil, Professor Pedro Cristofo Lech, who reached Steve and then Hugh. And then Hugh Roberto, and also acknowledge because I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to work with, I think, almost all the researchers in ARI in some different projects. And a special thank to Danica Goggin, which was one of my supervisors, and she was just amazing on helping me with my thesis and also my experiments. Yeah, and thanking to you as well for having me in this podcast.
No worries, JD. Well, we miss you in the office, but we're glad that you're still in the industry in Australia and we can catch up with you like this. Thank you so much for explaining the research, and we really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat.
Thanks very much.